Tell me about the study. What made you decide to undertake this subject?
Well, I have actually been involved with the juvenile justice system in various capacities for probably the last over a dozen years. I was originally a correctional officer in an all-girls facility, and then I graduated from that to being a juvenile probation officer in a little West Texas town, and then moved on to become an administrator at the state level. And throughout that process, I just really became curious about the prevalence of kids with mental health needs coming into our system, and then also kind of seeing firsthand that there seemed to be some variation on how those kids were handled by the system, and that girls particularly seemed to be having a little bit of a harder struggle. So as I was finishing my PhD, that's when I really started putting the research and policy to practice. And this current study was actually a follow-up to the previous one that my colleague and I had published in the Journal of Youth and Adolescence back in 2013, where we actually looked at what pathways youth take to and through the juvenile justice system. And some of the things we found in that study, you know, prompted this one. And so just to kind of highlight those, the first and foremost was we wanted to know what was the strongest predictor that determined how deep in the system went. Like, what determined that kids went to youth prison or treatment centers or detention or just stayed home? And we loaded all the normal variables in, you know, like age at first referral, ethnicity, age at current referral, offense severity, all those things. And what surprised us was the fact that the strongest predictor of where kids ended up in the system was actually a positive endorsement on the traumatic experiences scale of the mental health screening instrument the state was using.
So essentially, by that you mean what?
So essentially what that means is that a youth who answers this question on the screening instrument indicated that they had had a prior traumatic event occur in their life, whether they watched someone be murdered, they themselves had been the experience of sexual trauma or other domestic violence situations. So essentially, for every positive endorsement, for every question that those kids answered in the affirmative saying, yeah, I had been a victim or I had seen a traumatic event, it increased the likelihood of them actually being incarcerated, more so than the offense even that brought them to the system to begin with. And then when we added to that, the other qualifier of the current study was the fact that we found for girls, they were 7 times more likely to be placed in youth prison settings, whether it be at the state level or at the county-operated level, for violations of probation than their male counterparts. So that made us a bit curious as to, well, if girls particularly have experienced more trauma in their lives or different types of trauma than boys, and they're failing probation and being funneled deeper in the system, then what's happening to the time that they are in the system? Like, what predicts how kids move through the correctional side of things? And that's where this current study picks up.
You looked at more than 5,000 juveniles in 3 large urban counties, as I understand it?
Yes, sir, we sure did.
Which counties and why?
Well, I can't really tell you what counties as part of our agreement with them, but the counties that were chosen because they contributed over 51% of the overall state's referrals to the juvenile justice system, number one. And then number two, they were chosen because they were very different demographically. So one county was primarily Hispanic, another had a primary African-American population, and the other was a little more Caucasian.
Can you say if any of those counties were in North Texas?
Yes, at least one was.
In the study, you found females in the juvenile justice system tend to serve longer sentences than males. Why?
I really don't know why. What we do know from the study is that girls who were adjudicated for status offense and sentenced ultimately to a juvenile correction setting were actually released slower from that setting than males. So it appeared to be that the variance occurred by those girls who weren't committing very violent offenses, but basically were violated into the system somehow. So we can theorize that it may be because of their behaviors that manifest as a part of their trauma history. Essentially, you know, when girls are in the community, they can get in trouble for status offenses like skipping school or running away or smoking cigarettes on campus, things that adults don't get in trouble for. Mm-hmm. And those could be coping mechanisms for some kind of trauma experience that they're occurring in the home or in the community. Then when you lock them up and you take those away, they no longer have the ability to do the 3 things that people do when we're scared. We either fight or we freeze. the girls can no longer flee. They can't run away from a juvenile corrections facility. They can't really freeze because they're held accountable for every movement of the day, and they have to be responsive to the correctional officers, so they fight. And so when girls spit, slap, you know, fight back in correctional settings, they get sanctions put against them, and that could be why they're staying longer. But, you know, more study could tell us more about that.
Is all of this mere coincidence? Maybe is discrimination at work here?
I can't articulate whether it's discrimination at work here or what the real reasons why. What we can say is that, you know, there is something going on that, you know, causes girls particularly to be placed in more secure settings than males for lower level offenses and for longer periods of time.
Has there been any response to your studies so far from the juvenile justice system?
Not at this point, but I will say this. You know, nobody in the juvenile justice system, whether it's Texas, whether it's Maryland, Washington, or any state in the country, nobody gets into this industry to do anything other than to help kids. And so I'd imagine that, you know, this kind of information will hopefully inform policymakers just to kind of take a look at what they're doing and then maybe open up the dialogue for more study and more conversation.
What can be done about this?
You know, one of the things we could look at is, you know, how are these kids, any kid, primarily a kid with mental health needs or a kid with a developmental delay or a kid with a trauma history, but just youth in general, how are they interacting with the juvenile justice system? And is there ways to change some of that interaction? So essentially, how do the schools interact with the police? How do the police interact with families? How do families interact with the schools? Like the entire ecology of where the kiddo and the family live and reside and how those systems respond to each other would be one of the first things we could look at. Like, why is it that a girl who runs away or smokes cigarettes on campus ultimately ends up locked up? Is there something different we can do or at least respond to differently in order to keep that from occurring? The second would be, you know, really kind of thinking about how the court process works in general. Is there a way to look at how we can assess and respond to youth through a developmental lens? So really looking at, do they understand the ramifications of what has gone on with them and where they're going to end up? And, you know, are they cognitively able to actually participate in their own court process?
So it sounds like there's a good deal of work that needs to be done before these kids ever get sent to the juvenile justice system.
There could be. There very much could be. But you have organizations trying to do something with that, like the Girls Study Group, who's done nothing but focus, and this is a phenomenal group of researchers and policymakers trying to look at how you can look at a gender-responsive lens just specifically to the girls' response to this issue. And then you have the MacArthur Models for Change effort. It's really looking at defense policies, looking at prosecution protocols, mental health and juvenile justice diversion, disproportionate minority contact, how can we respond to kids of ethnic character differently. So there's a lot of people having a really targeted dialogue around this. And my main hope is that research like this continues to move forward and just kind of keeps moving that dialogue in a really targeted way.
Erin Espinoza, thank you for being with me.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.